And now, ladies and gentlemen, meet the press. Ready for today's unrehearsed, spontaneous press conference are four of America's top reporters. Please remember that their questions do not necessarily reveal their view. It's their way of getting a story for you. Now meet Mr. James Warner of the New York Herald Tribune, Mr. Saul Tashoff of Broadcasting Magazine, Mr. Frank McNaughton of Time Magazine, Mr. Lawrence Spivak of Mercury Publications, a regular member of the Meet the Press panel. Finally, Miss Martha Rountree, moderator of Meet the Press.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, members of the press panel, and Commissioner Hennick. And now, Commissioner, if you're ready, who has the first question? Mr. Spivak.
Commissioner, it's pretty well agreed that a compatible color system, that is one which will receive in black and white color programming, in other words, one that'll use our present sets, is in the public interest. Why then did the commission vote for non-compatible system at this time? They've had color before them for, I think, 10 years. What was the hurry?
Well, they felt that color was a very great improvement, Mr. Spivak, and that it was wrong to keep it from the people any longer. If they kept waiting for a compatible system, and they just couldn't wait anymore. In their opinion, they attached that much importance to color.
Well, sufficient importance so that it may make our 12 million sets obsolescent? I mean, is that, do you think, in the public interest?
Well, they thought that the present set holders could not deter the development of color forever, and it wasn't fair to the development of the art of television to just wait for color forever. Now, I disagreed with that opinion, of course.
I was just going to say, you're talking for the commission now.
Yes,
I'd like to ask you a question about yourself. You voted against the CBS color system. Will you tell us why?
Well, I thought compatibility was too great a price to pay for color at this time, and that's where we disagreed. But I did agree that the Columbia color system was a very... I think their color is very good. I didn't agree with the incompatible system, and I was worried about the 12.5 million sets. Go ahead. Do you have another question, Mr.
Well, what I want to ask, you've given the go-ahead now to Columbia Color. What would happen if someone comes along within the next few weeks or the next few months with a better system? Will the commission view it?
Well, we'd have to, because the commission in its final decision said that it was hoping that a compatible system would come along and that and set criteria for compatible system. And it would be in duty bound to view it. It would be in the public interest to see any improvement in color. And I do think the compatible system is the answer to the color question and the final answer. Mr. Tashoff.
Let us assume, Ms. Hennick, that the commission should take a look at a so-called compatible system. It has already approved an incompatible system. Would that mean you would have a dual system, dual standards? And what would that mean to the public, the set owner?
Well, that would depend on the timing, of course, Mr. Tashoff, as you well know, as the leading publisher in this field. Your Broadcasting and Telecasting magazine has covered this subject very thoroughly, and I might say that dual standards are very confusing. That was one of the reasons I did not want an incompatible system. I was hoping that we would have one set of standards. But I think in the public interest that if a compatible system came along in the near future, it might be a good idea to have dual standards and let the public be the final arbiter of this whole question.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that that's the commission's intent. But you now have a commercially approved color system. The commission cannot turn its back on that. So I would assume that the commission will be disposed to take a look at any other systems that may be developed that appear to give to provide a service that the commission would regard as acceptable. You would then have dual standards. The public would then have to make whatever adjustments in their receivers to accept and accommodate both systems.
I'm afraid so. I think perhaps the sets will be able to accommodate both systems. I'm sure they will. Mr. McNaughton.
Well, what happens to the people that have got the 12.5 million people that have their television sets now? They have to go to the expense of completely changing them under this system that's been approved, do they not, Miss Hanna?
Well, that all depends. It will take a long time for these sets to become obsolescent completely. There will always be black and white broadcasting, I should say for a number of years. I can't speak forever. This is a rather dynamic field, as you know. I do feel that the present set, when you think of 12.5 million sets and a possible viewing audience of some 36 million or 40 million people, the broadcasters will always service these sets. That's a very sizable audience. And they will always get black and white broadcasts, certainly for the lifetime of these sets. Now then, when Columbia is broadcasting color on these incompatible standards, the black and white sets that are now in the hands of the public cannot receive anything in black and white. But for the expenditure, and these are the figures quoted in our record last year, of some $35, they can get an adapter on the present black and white set to get a black and white picture out of that color picture at when broadcast by the color system or the color stations. Go ahead, Mr. McNaughton.
Well, I'd like to lead this aside from that just for a minute. I want to ask you, Miss Hennock, do you favor the broadcasting, telecasting of committee investigations of the Congress, like the Kefauver Committee? Do you think that television performed a public service in broadcasting those? And also, do you favor Senator Kefauver's proposal that they telecast the examination of cabinet officers?
May I take one part of that question at a time? I was quite fascinated by the Kefauver investigation on television. I watched it very carefully, as so many others did. I think it had a terrific impact on the development of television. It brought home to all of us the importance of the art and the dangers of it and its possibilities for good as well as evil. Now, Senator Kefauver handled that investigation very well, and considering that it was the first major broadcast of its type, it was done with great discrimination and justice. But this very powerful medium for the use of public hearings and judicial proceedings and legislative investigations must be watched very carefully. I think all
the
bar associations... No, it doesn't come under our jurisdiction. That, again, is programming. That will be up to the government agencies who are using the art or the medium. It will be up to Congress to determine whether its investigations or its examinations of cabinet offices should be televised. It'll be up to the courts to determine whether any judicial proceedings should be televised. And I think they have to look into it very carefully and set down very stringent rules, because you can work great hardships on witnesses by subjecting them to a viewing audience of 20 million people. I should hate to testify under oath as a witness. And I think Senator Kefauver must have screened many witnesses, hundreds of them, before he put one on the stand.
Well, don't you agree, though, Miss Hennock, that it can do a great deal of good in informing the public, letting them see their government at work, people who can't come here to see the government at work, and do a great deal of educational good
The
public on
Yes, but I think that the government agencies have to determine when they want to be televised and under what conditions, and they have to set stringent rules.
Mr. Warner.
Have you given any thought, Miss Hennock, to the impact of that sort of thing, the Kefauver hearing and all, on the press and the coverage? I have a selfish interest in that, of course, as some of the rest of us do. In New York, we found that the Kefauver hearings, so many people stayed home that it emptied the movie theaters, cut down retail sales, but in our paper, at least, the New York Herald Tribune, our circulation rose. I think the other papers did. Have you thought of any, given any thought to the impact of a really big television news coverage on the newspaper industry?
Well, I think it would stimulate these other media of communications. I think just as radio did not harm newspapers, but helped them. Now, it might have cut out the extra editions, because now anyone can turn the radio dial and get an extra, the news immediately, so that they don't have to buy an extra. Mm-hmm. But certainly, radio has helped newspapers, just as television has helped radio.
Mr. Spivak.
Ms. Hennig, I'd like to go back for a moment to this two-color system. Did I understand you to say that if RCA or some other group perfects a better system, a composite system, that the commission may okay that one too, or would they be likely, if it were good enough, to replace the Columbia system? In other words, would you have two systems, or would you have one system, whichever was better?
Well, Mr. Spivak, I'd very much like to say now I only speak for myself and not the entire commission. To begin with, it would help me answer that question, I'd have to know the timing. For instance, if in the next year or two, many sets are bought, Columbia color sets are bought, and those sets are going to be affected because we then establish a new color system. Surely we have to consider how many of the Columbia color sets there are in the hands of the public because before we make those obsolete and whether they're entitled to programming and servicing and what dislocation we're making. And I think that the question will have to be determined at the time and in view of all the circumstances and the effect on the public expenditures, because in the final analysis, the public has financed television. They've spent billions of dollars for these sets, these black and white sets, and if they buy color, they'll be paying for it.
Yeah, but Miss Hennick, the commission didn't seem to have given very much consideration to what the public has spent on its present black and white sets, though.
Well, that's your opinion, not that of the Supreme
Court.
Well,
that's a question.
Mr. Spivak.
Well,
now they did, because the Supreme Court said that the commission had the right to make the decision, had the power, made it fairly, and after thorough consideration. Speaking of the MacArthur hearings, you've only had 6,000 pages of testimony on that. We had 10,000 in color.
No, but I was getting back. You say that the commission will give consideration to the matter of how many color sets have been bought, how many sets have been bought to take the Columbia Broadcasting. Well, there are 12 million sets that now take black and white, which may be made obsolete if the Columbia system, if a composite system, isn't accepted somewhere along the line.
Well, that isn't true. It would take many years to obsolete the present sets.
No.
It would take, 5 to 10 years at least. You see, it would take at least, there are 12 and a half million sets in the hands of the public. Think of how many years it would take for a similar number of sets, color sets, to be sold. I mean, on the Columbia system. Now, in the meantime, those sets will have to be serviced with black and white.
I have a specific question on this thing. I picked up the New York Times the other day, and the radio critic of the Times wrote, "The majority of the engineers in the electronics field believe that RCA's color system is technically the soundest and feel that definite improvement in its operation has been made. These improvements have not been seen by the FCC. Now, shouldn't the FCC, on its own initiative in the public interest, in view of the improvements, reopen the color question and bring the whole color matter up to date, in your judgment?"
Mr. Spivak, if there was any compatible system around that was ready at the time we made our decision. Now, you must not forget that I did not think a compatible system was ready at the time. I just thought it was more important to wait for one. We couldn't find it. We were looking for it, high and low, believe me. And I think we'll continue to look for it. And as soon as it comes along, I'm sure we'll view it. Now, it's utter nonsense to think that we wouldn't.
Well, has the commission viewed this improved system?
Well, where is it?
Well,
I don't know where it is.
If
it may be here, it may not.
If the critics of the New York Times saw it, why wouldn't the commission be able to see it?
Well, is there such a thing as a new color system on paper? I found that out. Without equipment, without field testing, and without pickup equipment, there is no system. Now, I'd like to see that system. I haven't seen it yet. Now, it may be here. I don't know.
In other words, you're saying if it is here, you want to see it.
I want to see it very badly.
And if it's good enough, the commission will view it.
There is no question about that in my mind.
Mr. Teshoff.
Well, isn't it a fact that by virtue of the Supreme Court decision upholding the commission's right to determine whether or not a particular system should be adopted, that there must be a lapse of 25 or 30 days before the Supreme Court mandate gets to the lower court and then to the commission before you even have the opportunity of taking another look?
No, I don't think that has anything to do with it. The mandate would only affect the right of Columbia to broadcast color. Until that mandate goes into effect, which would be the last week in June, Columbia still cannot broadcast its color on the air, but at the end of June, they can certainly come on with broadcast. In the meantime, we have a perfect right to look at anything in the public interest. And as you know, the Supreme Court said we were omnipotent, Mr. Teshoff. Now, you may not like that.
Does the commission feel that black
I'm
and white...
I'm not always sure you do.
Does the commission feel that black and white is as perfect as it can get?
Why, no, Miss Roundtree. The improvements in television are as rapid and as phenomenal as we can't even keep up with them, and neither can the industry. There's no telling tomorrow what improvements there'll be in television, in black and white television.
My question was why we shouldn't try to perfect that before we go into something else that's so expensive. We haven't even perfected the black and white, and we have 12 and a half million sets.
Well, I think we should work on all fronts, Ms. Roundtree. I think you have a good point, however.
Well, I'd like to see it improve. Mr. Tayshoff, go ahead.
Well, I'd like to shift to another phase of this television.
Well, now, before you do that, did you want to follow up on that, Mr. McNaughton?
Yes, I did, Miss.
Then we'll come back to you in a moment, then, Mr. Tayshoff.
Well, Miss Hannock, you said just a minute ago that the improvements were so fast and rapid that we couldn't keep up with them, but yet at the same time, here the commission comes in and votes in one system, orders one incompatible system for color, and 12 million sets, 12 and a half million. Now I want to ask, on the basis of that, whether the commission has taken any steps to investigate the RCA system.
We've investigated that RCA system so many times and so often. And now there is a new composite system by the Television Systems Committee. And I want to tell you that this whole color question is not one that dates back to yesterday. It was present before the commission in 1941 and again in 1946 when we had very extended hearings. There was talk then of a compatible system. There's always talk of a compatible system, and I believe in a compatible system, and I think it will be forthcoming. But I have yet to see a workable system, and I'm sure that when it's here, we'll be the first to want it and adopt it.
Mr. Warner.
In the meantime, though, Miss Hennick, what you're saying, the FCC is going ahead on the CBS thing. Suppose there are 5 million CBS color sets under this thing. You'll have 17 million obsolescent sets at the end of 5 or 10 years.
Well, now, just a moment.
Take on a new one, isn't that right?
No, that isn't right at all. In the meantime, these 12 and a half million sets are black and white sets getting black and white broadcasting.
It will take
some years before... Oh, no, no. I don't think... No, they'll only have to get adapters in case they want to get the color broadcasts in black and white.
Well,
I'm sure there will be...
Won't be able to another system.
Just on the Columbia system, they won't be able to get their black and white. No,
well, I don't presume that the Columbia Broadcasting Company is going to broadcast color morning, noon, and night. They're going to have a few hours of color broadcasting in the beginning and then increase the color broadcasting, but they're certainly going to service black and white sets. They don't want to go out of business. It takes some time to get millions of color sets in the hands of the public. Years, I should say. Mm-hmm. They're much more expensive, too, you know.
May I ask you this very practical question? In view of the uncertainties in color television and the possibility that a compatible system may be worked out, would you advise me to buy a color set now?
Well, I don't know how much money you have. I know
just enough to afford a black and white set, Miss Hannick.
Well, that all depends on taste. How important you consider color? I still say what in color. I'd rather see a good black and white program any day of the week than a gory murder mystery.
Mr. McNaughton.
I'd like to lead this just a little bit aside for just a minute, Miss Hannah. Why was it that the commission ducked the responsibility of policing race wires and gambling wires and things like that when the Kefauver Committee suggested that they should be the agency to police these wires and stop transmission of gambling information? They ducked it every way they could. Didn't want to do it.
Well, to begin with, we're a much maligned agency, but I think Mr. Tayshoff will also tell you a very much overworked agency, an understaffed agency, an under-budgeted agency. We have so many functions to perform now, I don't see how we do half of them. Now, and I'm sure Chairman Coy, a very distinguished and able public servant, had that in mind. Now, I happen to disagree again, and I did feel that it should be our jurisdiction, provided we were given the budget and plenty of help to do it with.
Go ahead, Mr. McNaughton.
Well, at the same time, though, the commission's official attitude was that they wanted the Department of Justice to do it.
Well, I think you'll have to have the Department of Justice step in anyway.
Well, they didn't want any of the responsibility, though, as I recall it.
Well, as I say, if we had half the budget, we have $1 million... And more now in our budget than we had in 1946. And that we've had to regulate in our three functional divisions about five times as much work.
Well, don't you?
And we have fewer in help because we've had to absorb two raises. Now it's just humanly impossible to keep on working this way.
Well, don't you think it's the responsibility of the commission? It's rather than the Department of Justice, because they know where the wires are. They have the maps of them. They know the terminus. And terminals of all of them. Don't you think they're the proper agency to do this job?
Well, I happen to agree with you. I voted that way, but that doesn't mean that the commission was wrong either. I can see their viewpoint. I can always see the majority's viewpoint. I have a great deal of faith in my brother commissioners.
Mr. Tayshaw.
Well, I'd still like to revert to another very burning issue in television. And that's the matter of educational telecasting.
I'm glad you brought that up.
And I believe that the commission proposes to reserve 209 assignments for educational institutions. Now, how long do you think these reservations should hold? I mean, 5 years, 5 months, 5 days?
Oh, I think forever.
Well, why? Why should we reserve a facility very much in demand? We have, I believe, only 107 television stations on the air today in 63 markets. We've had a freeze on now, I believe, for about 3 years. Incidentally, your term expires in 1955. Do you believe the freeze will be thawed by then?
Well, I appreciate that reminder, Mr. Tayshoff. I take it in kind. I just want you to know, Mr. Tayshoff, that these airwaves belong to the people. That we are charged with regulating them in the interest of the people. But I know of no more important function for these airwaves than to serve as public schools of the air, flooding this country and every part of it with education, and this educational reservation is for that purpose, and that is more important than anything else we can do, in my opinion.
Well, what sort of education do you have in mind? Would you define an educational program for me, the kind that would be transmitted on a non-commercial educational station?
Well, now, do you really want me to go to that?
Well,
I'll do it. I define an educational station as one first that is licensed to an educational institution, such as a college, a school board, and so forth, any class of education.
Parochial school also?
Any school. Any licensed educational institution. And as you know, our decision, and by the way, the last paragraph on page 3 says that these stations shall be used cooperatively by all the other educational institutions in that community, wherever necessary. Now, an educational station in a rural area would serve the farmer, would serve them with all the requirements, both morning and night. In class, the educators would teach with television. Now, for adult education, in the evening, they would service that community with adult education.
Okay.
Now, they would service them with history, geography, current events, art, literature, and so forth. Now, you're not satisfied with that?
No, I'm... Now, on in-school matter, in school, why not mechanical aids to education? Why not motion pictures? You have the flexibility. You can fit them into your curriculum. Why use television when frequencies are in very scarce supply for that purpose?
You were? Let me answer that by testimony submitted to us by the educators in our last hearing. The city of New York, the public schools, indicated that they wanted to cover the 800 public schools with television programming because it was the only way they could do a job in visual education. It costs a fortune to cover the in-class teaching with visual education. Now the Board of Regents has come along with a plan to establish 11 television stations in the state of New York, which is a statewide network. And they will make those stations available to 8,000 educational stations in educational institutions under their aegis. Now surely you must realize what a saving that will be for in-class teaching as well as adult teaching.
I'm sorry, Commissioner Hennick, I must interrupt. We seem to just be getting started here, but our time is up. This concludes our latest edition of Meet the Press. Thank you, Commissioner Hennick, for being with us. And now a word about next week's guest.
Next week, Revere Copper and Brass Incorporated will again present America's Press Conference of the Air, Meet the Press. Be sure to join us then when our guest will be Charles E. Wilson, former president of General Electric, now the Director of Defense Mobilization. Now, good afternoon for Mr. James Warner, Mr. Saul Tayshoff, Mr. Frank McNaughton, Mr. Lawrence Spivak, Miss Martha Rountree, Miss Frieda Hennick. You've met the press. Now meet Revereware, that line of famous copper-clad stainless steel cooking utensils made by Revere Copper and Brass Incorporated.